Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stay glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in, since they going back to showing action tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the anime action fan sanctuary, with Tom providing that slick commentary.
Hey there, my Toonami generation. Welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your primetime host, Thomas. Primetime Metis, and this is episode 41. We took a short break there to celebrate my 50th by covering my favorite anime of all time with the legendary Richie Branson with Gundam Wing, but now we're back to Disney Month as we cover what is probably my third favorite Disney animated film of all time, Aladdin. Yes, Aladdin is a very beloved film in my heart. It's perfection. Just like Beauty and the Beast is, but for different reasons. It's comedy. It's more comedy. It's more action. If Beauty and the Beast was more geared towards girls, Aladdin is the movie that was more geared towards boys, and tons of other stuff we'll get into. And wait. What's that? You want to know where I've been for the past month? yeah. Kind of hoping we'd skip by that, but I guess I can't ignore that 20,000-pound elephant in the room. But, yeah, if you notice, there's about a month gap between these episodes. Especially considering that Disney Month is supposed to take place in February. Well, basically what happened is, pretty much soon after I posted up the Richie Branson review of Gundam Wing, or the Gundam Wing review I did with Richie Branson, I found that I had a computer virus. The type that you can't just fix yourself. So yeah, I had my computer down for a month as I'd saved up money and tons of other stuff. Because getting rid of a virus is apparently very, very expensive. But yeah, I had a computer virus that took me offline, or at least off a computer, for the past month. Thank God for my Android. So that I can keep track of news and stuff. But for a lot of sites that I go to and stuff like that, didn't see them for about a month. Yeah. Yeah, that's basically what happened. I just had a computer virus. I'm sorry to anybody who's inconvenienced. I'm sorry to anybody who missed the show or whatever. And that goes for all my shows. You'll probably see an apology posted up, hopefully, before this episode gets posted up. Basically explaining the same thing, but it is what it is. But now my computer's clean and everything, and I can get back to what I love doing, which is reviewing stuff I love. Well, or reviewing animation, reviewing all the other stuff I do. I shouldn't say, well, because I do review things I don't like, but that's a whole different story. Yeah, I've purposely stayed away from the things that I rant and rave about for a reason. I work now, I can't be that stressed. But that's here nor there. Back to the main topic for this episode, which is Aladdin. Came out in 1993, and to much beloved fanfare. Started out a bit slow. It made good money, but started out slow. But by Christmas was number one. It went for a long time, just like Beauty and the Beast and just like Little Mermaid. Part of that line of films, you know, Little Mermaid, I would say through to Mulan, that did really, really well. And it's just part of that, you know, classic 90s lineup, the Disney films. Of course, starring many great, you know, Robin Williams as the genie, along with other great actors doing the voice. Just a beloved film. Lovely songs. Probably, as we'll get to when we talk about music, probably the best well-known love song of Disney animated films. And, mind you, I'm saying love song. And probably up there along with the most beloved Disney songs of all time as well. And like I said, I love Beauty and the Beast. But whole new world, as we'll see when we get to music, whole different levels, or level onto itself, I should say. But just wonderful art, beautiful art, great story. Like I said, a lot of comedy, a lot of action. And also an important place artistically. It really is one of the first movies to use the, well, not the first, but to primarily be done on the CAPS system. Computer animated drawing. Not that they didn't use paper, but, you know, they used it for a lot of things like Caves of Wonder and stuff like that. You know, on a technical aspect, Aladdin was a accomplishment upon itself. So just a wonderful movie that everybody knows and loves. And with that being said, I don't want to get into it too much. Because again, this is a lot of stuff we'll get into when we talk about it in the review itself. So with that being said, let's get into a review with synopsis first. Aladdin follows the tale of a young street rat named, what else? Aladdin, who dreams to escape the wretched, dirty streets of the great city of Agrabah. One day he is captured, accused of kidnapping the princess, who herself has escaped the palace trying to escape from being wed to one of a suitor that she must be wed to by her next, or 16th birthday. I'm trying to remember there for a second. Almost couldn't. Meanwhile, the evil vizier Jafar, you think I know the name by now, wants to get his hands on a legendary mystical lamp. So he sends Aladdin to the Cave of Wonders, where, through a fantastic sequence, manages to obtain the lamp. But before Jafar can take it from him, Aladdin falls into the cave and it is sealed forever. While in the cave, Aladdin accidentally rubs the lamp, releasing the genie, who is there to grant him 3 wishes. After tricking the genie into giving him a freebie of escaping the cave, he has the genie turn him into a prince so he can court Jasmine. They fall in love, but somehow Jafar is able to capture the lamp from Aladdin and makes the genie his own. He first wishes to be Sultan, followed then by being the most powerful source in the world. Though Aladdin is then able to trick him into wishing to become a genie to be the most powerful being in the world, therefore entrapping him in his own genie lamp, saving the day. Afterwards, Aladdin uses his final wish to free the genie. The Sultan declares that the princess can choose whoever she wants to marry, and they all live happily ever after. This is Aladdin.
I can show you the world, shining, shimmering, splendid. Tell me, princess, now when did you last let your heart decide? I can open your eyes, take you wonder by wonder, over, sideways, and under. On a magic carpet ride, a whole new world, a new fantastic point of view.
or where to go, or say we're only dreaming.
A new world.
And welcome back, and let's get right into it as we usually do. We start off with music. And let's first talk about, there's the score and then there's the songs, especially when it comes to Disney animated films. And you know, the songs are just wonderful. Again, the first songs of this were started by Howard Ashman while he was gravely ill with HIV and everything. And he passed away while sort of in the prelims of this film, as long with sort of the finishing of Beauty and the Beast. So there were a couple of songs that he did with Alan Menken. So there's like a couple that are him and Alan Menken, and then Alan Menken worked the rest with Tim Rice, who we would later go on to work on Lion King with. But the songs, all of them, are just wonderful. The first big song you hear is One Jump Ahead, which is basically the introduction into Aladdin himself, and does a wonderful job. And one of the great things, there are two songs in this movie that have reprieves that sort of really help the story and are just great upon themselves. That's One Jump Ahead and Prince Ali. The Prince Ali one, basically, the reprieve is the villain song for Jafar. And the lyrics in all of this is just wonderful. One jump ahead of the bread line. It really brings out how these films have become basically sort of Broadway plays, because the songs themselves, again, they do everything I want them to do. They're wonderful, they're catchy, they're great songs, especially to sing upon yourself. They move the story along, but they're very evident that they're very sort of Broadway-like songs. And One Jump Ahead is sort of a perfect example of that, sort of the jaunty, catchy tune, and really brings you into what the basic idea for this film was. Aladdin, in its conception, was basically based off the genie being this sort of 1920 Harlem jazz band leader type of shapeshifter. And, of course, they also pictured it being voiced by Robin Williams in the initial draft. In fact, and again, I want to remind you that the DVD that I watched Aladdin on for this review was the special edition DVD that got released in the thousands that had an evening with, it had tons of extras. And on the extras, there is this short little clip where they show this reel that they did basically to sell the film, where they showed, again, a genie in a sort of earlier formed sketch. Basically, what they did is they took a Robin Williams track and they did an animated genie to his jokes. It was, I'm trying to remember which comedy album it was. It's escaping my mind. It was like the one in the late 80s that got released. Which, by the way, when Aladdin gets released on Blu-ray, I hope that's on there. I hope the full length of that is on there. I'd love to see that. That'd be a great special edition to have. But, bringing this back to the music, the reason I bring that up is, again, that sort of Harlem jazz type of style that you do hear in this movie. There's definitely that sort of more jazz, more a lot of a brass feel to the music. You feel it in the songs. And One Jump Ahead is again, it's a very jazzy number, upbeat, up-tempo, brings you into the story of who Aladdin is, and also makes you fall in love with his character fairly quickly. He is this sort of this thief, but he's that good nature in him is in there. And again, that reprieve that happens there for very shortly after he gives the breads to the kids. And, confrontation with the snotty prince who's going to the palace. Again, that whole street rat, riffraff, I don't buy that. If only they'd look closer, would they see a poor boy? No, sorry. They'd find out there's so much more to me. Again, that reprieve there really completes that song, because you had that very jazzy number. Again, it's just so fun of a number. It's all the places they went and everything. That made Aladdin seem like this cool dude to follow. And again, that little reprieve, this really brings you into just who he is as a complete character. Really, the very next song you have is sort of the highlight of the movie.
it is sort of the flagship song of the movie, and that's Friend Like Me, sung by Robin Williams. You know, you ain't never had a friend like me. Of the times to blank, like I said, just listen to it. And your Alibaba had them 40 thieves, if it's ever had 100 tails. But you're in luck, man, it's up your sleeve, you got a man, da-da-da-da. Again, you hear that sort of Harlem jazz feel to the music. I love it! That jazz feel. It's jazz, big beat, sort of 1920 feels. Again, very Broadway-esque, you know. And again, that's the Friend Like Me song, just this jazzy number, just a fun, you know, tons of sort of little comedic bits. You know, the genie basically telling, you know, why he should be glad he has a friend like the genie. Mind you, we'll be talking about sort of the comedy a little bit later, but just a wonderful song. Very catchy. I just wish my mind wasn't blanking on the lyrics, considering that I just looked them up and just tried to remember them. But you know, Mr. Aladdin, sir, what will your pleasure be? Da 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 da. You ain't never had a friend like me. Yeah, you hear that sort of jazziness in that tune. It's one of the reasons I love it. It's, like I said, I wish I wasn't blanking. And then the next song is, and it seems like a lot of these songs, you know, if you listen to the commentary, they talk about list songs that Howard Ashman likes to do, where you list things. And it does seem like the first three songs are kind of just that. And Prince Ali is another example of, you know, make way for Prince Ali. Say hey for Prince Ali. You hear that? There's that sort of, you do have bits of sort of Middle Eastern influence in the music. But again, still that, and sort of to an extent, a more jazzy number, you know. Hey, make way in the old bazaar. Bazaar. This first to say hi. Ring bell, bing a drum, bing a drum. Are you gonna love this guy? Prince Ali had to give Prince Ali a babwa. Strong as 10 men must lose. Again, when we get to the next song, I know the words. I definitely know the words, because hell, I've been singing that song ever since it came out. But again, you know, again, it is this catchy number. Again, the comedy in the music is wonderful. But just, again, this whole Prince Ali, this grandstand of, you know, Aladdin becoming this prince. And again, it's just a great, fun song that really introduces the second act of the movie. You know, Friend Like Me was sort of the great sort of closing song to the first act. And then Prince Ali is really the song that really introduces firmly the second act beginning. And mind you, you have stuff that happens in between it. But again, it's really a gray area. Not that the film falls from that, but again, this song is really the introduction into the second act. It's the introducing of them getting together. And again, like I said, this song also had a reprieve. You know, technically, the reprieve is the last song of the movie, but again, it gets turned into the sort of villain song, because they never really had a villain song for Jafar, mostly because of time issues. You know, if you listen to the commentary, they talk about that. But with, you know, Jafar, you know, they gave him this little reprieve of Prince Ali that he turned into his own, you know, basically exposing Aladdin as a fraud. And it's just, it's this great little reprieve, and it's just so fun in itself. And, you know, Jafar finally, you know, he's so reserved for most of the film. You know he's evil, but he's just so reserved. But it's like, here he's cutting loose. He's finally obtained everything that he wants. But, you know, like I said, the final big song I think we'll talk about is, again, like I said, probably the most well-known Disney love song, alongside, you know, Beauty and the Beast, and that's Whole New World. And probably one of the greatest, I think, love songs ever did, you know, as a duet as well and everything. You know, sung by Brad Kane and Lea Seydoux in the movie. Blanking on the names who did it outside of the movie. It's Rubia Benson and it's somebody else. And for the longest time, I thought it was Luther Vandross, actually, because like the MP3 I like downloaded long ago had it as Luther Vandross. You know, I was wrong. You know, whole new world, just a, you know, I could sit here, you know, and sing the whole song. The lyrics are wonderful. It, without even watching the movie, you can just listen to the song itself, and it brings you to every sensation of love and sort of all the sensation that the songs are trying to bring to you. You know, again, when you see it in the movie, you know, the whole opening for it, you know, it has a little sort of musical number that introduces this song, and then goes right into, you know, I can show you the world, shining, shimmering, splendid. Tell me, princess, now when did you last let your heart decide? I can open your eyes, I'll take you wonder by wonder, over, sideways, and under, on a magic carpet ride. A whole new world, a new fantastic point of view. No one to tell us no, or where to go, or say we're only dreaming. Again, I'll stop, because again, I can go and do the entire song. It's a wonderful duet. Just, oh my god, just, it really tells the story of these two people who were falling in love, trying to fall in love, and falling in love. And it's just a wonderful love song. It's, as much as Friend Like Me is sort of the main song of the movie, sort of the centerpiece, so is Whole New World. You know, Whole New World and Friend Like Me, centerpieces, I believe both were nominated for Oscars, and Whole New World ended up winning the Oscar. You know, this movie won Oscars for both Whole New World as a song, four songs, and for its score. And speaking of the score, again, Alan Menken did the underscore to the score in the movie. It's just wonderful. A lot of the themes sort of follow the same sort of magical, or musical, I should say, thematics of the songs themselves. Using a lot of Middle Eastern tones and everything. Alan Menken did an absolute wonderful job in the score of this movie. Really probably one of the great Disney scores in my mind. I'm talking mainly here about the underscore. You know, some of my favorites, you know, the Genie sort of freedom music, sort of Jafar sort of evil music, a lot of sort of the sort of light undertones that, you know, Alan Menken used that I think was perfect. It was, the music was there, it enhanced the movie. You know, it's like I always say, the music needs to be there, it needs to be front and center, but and needs to be heard, mind you, but it doesn't need to undercut the story of what, it doesn't need to, like, hey, I'm here, focus on me. You know, it's that thing to where it enhances the movie, but it doesn't overpower it. And again, you see a great example of that being done here by Alan Menken. With that, let's move on to art, and we're going to move on to first talking about the overall art style. Now, there was a very unique decision made with Aladdin. They wanted to go with sort of the Middle Eastern, sort of Arabian hieroglyphs sort of style, where everything had curves and everything. And through that, ultimately decided to go with a sort of Al Hirshid sort of art style, where everything has a curve. There's, if any, very, very few straight lines in Aladdin. If you actually look, everything is curved. The shadows are curved. The character designs are curved. You know, used to exact, you know, especially when the genie is, you know, imitating people and everything, curves are used to exaggerate the imitation to make it, in this case, much more funnier, but really to highlight the imitation and sort of the parody there that's going on. So they went with that Al Hirshid. And for those who don't know, Al Hirshid was a sort of cartoonist who would do, you know, like the little cartoons and like opinion pages and everything. He'd do it in the New York Post and everything like that. And he was just a when you see his art, he was a wonderful, wonderful artist. He passed away, I want to say, in the early 1000s. I could be wrong. I apologize for that, but he was a wonderful artist. It was Eric Goldberg who's one of the first artists brought onto the film and was the main character designer for the Genie, that actually was the one who really started to front the whole idea of, you know, let's really model it after Al Hirschhead. And so they went with that overall style of everything being curved. They used some wonderful color scheming, you know, again, red being evil, sort of blue and greens being good. Gold was a neutral color in this film. And it, you can really see that, you know, during sort of the first half, there's a lot of blue and greens when good is winning. But when Jafar takes over, as and more importantly, as he's taking over, you slowly see tints of red start to happen. And when he's fully taking over, everything's in red. You know, the Sultan is in that jester thing, but it's red's one of the primary colors. You know, all the, you know, columns and everything is all in red. The sky's red. Jasmine's dress is, garb, I think maybe would be a better term, because she doesn't wear a dress. She wears. We'll get to that in character design, but I don't want to make a fool of myself. But you know, her outfit is in red and everything, so you see that thematic being used more importantly in the third act. I think really wonderful decisions. Really, the art is just gorgeous in this movie. You know, the Al Hirschhead, use. Of curves and everything are just absolutely wonderful. Then you have character designs, just to go over real quickly, which shows you, by the way, how much I've watched the special. I can remember to memory who did what on this film. Glenn Keane did Aladdin. Mark Henn did Jasmine, who he modeled after his sister a bit. Andreas Deja did Jafar. Will Finn did Iago. Randy Cartwright did the carpet. And I'm blanking who did Abu. But, you know, some of the best in Disney were working on these characters. And the character designs are wonderful. With Aladdin probably had a lot of changes. In the initial designs for Aladdin, it was more of a, you know, he was much more younger looking, but when Jasmine was drawn and designed and was so beautiful, you know, Jeffrey Katzenberg, who again was working with Disney at the time, was sort of head of the department, said, you know, this is not going to work. You know, right now you have Michael J. Fox and Julia Roberts, and it really should be Tom Cruise and Julia Roberts. Again, I'm showing how much I've listened to the commentary and special features in this movie, because that is what he used. And so they went with, as they called it, sort of a Tom Cruise makeover for Aladdin, and he became sort of a little bit more older looking. But, you know, all in all, just a great design. They talk about how it is hard to design male characters, and I can see why. At the same point in time, I think they nailed it here. You know, design-wise, he's everything you want sort of the male lead. He's not overly buff, but he's not sort of skinny, but he's got that perfect sort of balance to him as a male character. Really a great character to look at in all sort of the different ways he is. And then you have Jasmine, just absolutely drop-dead gorgeous. You know, as I get older, it is the thing that comes to mind. Like, I you know, the way mothers react to things, it just shows you how awesome the 90s was, that Disney could put a Disney princess in that type of outfit, which I don't think there's anything wrong with, mind you. It is a typical sort of Middle Eastern sort of, I guess you'd call it sort of a Arabian harem outfit. I'm sure there's a more proper name, and I do apologize for not knowing the proper name in this case. But knowing mothers, especially how they act nowadays, I don't think you could do Aladdin today, because my God, mothers would have a field day blaming everything on it and how horrible Disney is to women and blah, 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 blah. I'll talk more about this with Legacy, I possibly. But you know what, Jasmine, that aside, Jasmine was a gorgeously designed character, very, you know, you understand why Aladdin wants to be with Jasmine. You can understand why any man wants to date and possibly marry and be with a person like Jasmine. And just design-wise, we'll talk more about, because part of what makes her a beautiful and sexy character that she is, and I use that word purposely just to piss people off, but what makes her a beautiful character is not just her design, which is gorgeous, but, you know, the actions and sort of story elements, which we'll get to later. But design-wise, just an absolutely drop-dead gorgeous character. I love her design. And then you had the genie and just all the curves and the way he shapeshifts and everything. Again, that, and using the thematic of blue, Eric Goldberg did a wonderful job on the genie. It's like, and you see bits of Robin Williams into the character itself. It's like, it's sort of that classic idea of the genie, but taken and given, to put a word to it, given sort of a Harlem jazz feel to it. I love it. Then you have Jafar. Andreas Deja at his best. Probably more narrow and closest to more sort of a straight line than the other characters. You know, the other characters have more roundness to them, whereas Jafar is more elongated and just, Andreas Deja's work at the best. It's just a wonderfully designed character. With the little curl and the mustache and everything, or I should say, in the beard and everything, and just the color scheme on him of the red, and, you know, I love the color scheme of these characters. You know, the blue and the blue greens on Genie and Jasmine, the white and purple, I think really works for Aladdin, and then sort of the red, maroon, and black really, really works with Jafar. You have Iago the parrot, Abu the little monkey, the carpet, and Raja the tiger, all wonderful. The parrot design, again, you feel Gilbert Gottfried in the design. One of reasons I love this movie is Gilbert Gottfried's in this movie. I cannot lie. It's Gilbert Gottfried. Be freaking Gilbert Gottfried. And I'll talk more about that in the next main topic or section, acting. But, you know, yeah, you, Will Finn went to great lengths to put bits of Gilbert Gottfried into the design of the parrot. There's this very funny thing on the extra where I laugh at thinking about it. But there's this very funny thing to where, you know, they're showing, you know, Gilbert doing, you know, recording in the studio, and while he's doing it, which happens at Eliza, it is a sort of normal practice at Disney for the animator of that character to be just watching, or at least when it's a main character, to be watching the actor act sometimes to, you know, try to integrate that voice actor into the character design as well. And so Will Finn, who apparently was a he apparently tried to bribe or like beg to do the parrot just because they planned to do Gilbert Gottfried, because he was a huge Gilbert Gottfried fan. And there's this very funny scene where apparently he was there all the time and he left, and Gilbert Gottfried looks at the camera and goes, "Who is that guy?" And in his Gilbert Gottfried voice, "He's such a pest!" And it makes me laugh, but Will Finn did a great job of design. And you can't, like I said, you have those in the design throughout the movie, there's Gilbert Gottfried mannerisms that are sort of designed into the parrot that are just wonderful and makes it fit Gilbert Gottfried's voice. And, you know, it's one of the reasons Iago the parrot has become such a beloved sort of Disney mascot upon his. It's funny, he's the bad guy, but he becomes so popular, they sort of jumps over Abu, and they end up making him a good guy. He was wonderful in Return of Jafar and Prince of Thieves, but that's a whole other story. But new character designs, all of them were just wonderful. I think next art thing to talk about is the action. my God, the action is wonderful in this movie. Again, like I said, use of the cap system, you know, the whole exploring of the Cave of Wonders and the race to get out as, you know, Abu touched the jewel that he wasn't supposed to touch. Which, you know, it kind of was a ticking clock in that scene because he knew he was going to touch the jewel or some treasure. Just like, when was he going to do it? But just that whole sort of roller coaster feel to the, you know, the carpet ride through the Cave of Wonders was gorgeous and excellent. The very few fight scenes were really well done, especially the final fight scene with Jafar. Just showing, you know, Aladdin using his environment to his advantage. Which is the thing we'll see with other Disney characters, mind you. But, you know, artistically, the action was really well done. It was easy to follow, but there was a sensation of thrill, you know, in the action sequences. It was just wonderful to watch. And then you had the backgrounds and special effects. God, the backgrounds and special effects were so many sort of what has become sort of well-known. You know, when you look at it, you know it's Disney. Cave of Wonders, Agrabah, you know, the sky for that matter. Yeah. You can show that sky to anybody, you know, the type of sky that's used in A Whole New World, and you instantly know, oh, that's Aladdin, isn't it? That's how well the backgrounds were. They were just gorgeous. Agrabah as a city, the buildings, again, all those curves, the Al Hirsch effect, you know, and just the... You know, again, when I review these movies, one of the things I do try to do is I try to see what other people say about these movies. And, of course, one of those people ended up being the Nostalgia Creep because Disney Semper was, really, really well done. And, you know, he talked about, you know, again, it being more sort of Broadway, more Las Vegas. But, again, that feel, it fits this sort of, I guess not the, there's the sort of story theme, but there's sort of the more artistic sort of musical theme going through the movie as well. And it is that sort of Harlem jazz, almost sort of Las Vegas, sort of Broadway play feel that the movie has artistically. Again, and those curves and Al Hirsch effect really work into that. And again, that's why you have, you know, Agrabah the way it is, and sort of, especially the palace, which is just gorgeous to look at. And then you have the Cave of Wonders, which was completely CGI, or at least the whole Lionhead aspect of it. And even today, it looks gorgeous and so well integrated into the film. It's like, you have films during that time that use CGI as alongside sort of hand-drawn art. And they use CG elements that move like the Cave of Wonders did. And it looks like CGI. It's like, you can differentiate between the CGI and the hand-drawn style. Because, you know, again, it was early CGI and it's not aged well. You can't do that here. It's really well done and integrated into the movie. Just top notch. And the special effects, you know, the Cave of Wonders was a special effects spectacular that was wonderful to watch. Just throughout the movie, the special effects, the coloring, the tints, and everything were just extremely, extremely well done. And like I said, the Cave of Wonders, all the different effects, sort of the cloud effects and everything, the lava flowing and everything, were just so well done. It just made that scene exciting. I mean, the special effects used during the musical numbers really enhanced the musical numbers. So special effects were just top notch. With that being said, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to get into acting and to story. So we'll be right back, folks.
In the decade of the 1930s, even the great city of Cleveland, Ohio, was not spared the ravages of the Great Depression. In a time of fear and confusion, a character emerged that would entertain and inspire millions of children and adults alike. He began not as flesh and blood, but as a simple line drawing. His comic book adventures thrilled millions around the world. The magic of radio gave to his name a breathless signature and sound. Then with television came a whole new generation to idolize his exploits. In the 70s, the world believed a man could fly. In the 80s, he was reborn in the comics, and the 90s saw his death, rebirth, and marriage. In the 21st century, he returned to the big screen and saw his origin changed and retold on several occasions. Through the decades, he has gone by many names. The Man of Tomorrow. The Last Son of Krypton. The Man of Steel. His strength is incredible. His name is legendary. His battle is never ending. Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound.
My name is Michael Bailey, and I host an internet radio show called Views from the Long Box. Superman is my favorite character of all time, and in 2013, he is turning 75. Because of this, a large portion of the episodes this year will be about the Man of Steel in a series I'm calling
Superman at 75, the celebration of a legend.
I'm going to mark Superman's birthday in fine style by examining all aspects of the character's history, from the comics, to the movies, to the television series, and beyond, both alone and with the best and brightest of the podcasting world. It may not be every episode, but the bulk of Views in 2013 will be all about the Man of Steel. He is the first and greatest superhero of them all, and he deserves no less.
Superman at 75. The celebration of a legend.
A series within a series, and the biggest birthday card a fan can give his favorite hero, only at Views from the Long Box. Views from the Long Box is a Fortress of Baileytude production. New episodes drop every other Tuesday over at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com, and for this series, over at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
I guess you weren't so tough after all, were you? Now it's time to send you to the next dimension.
291 original episodes.
This can't be. It's still going up!
325 manga chapters.
You act innocent, but you're deadly.
Time to die!
Dozens of characters, hundreds of enemies, and a whole lot of violence.
That kind of violence is pointless!
You see, Super Saiyans tend to be a bit violent.
Oh, crap!
Join hosts Donovan and Jesse as they cover the arrival of the Saiyans, the journey to Namek, the battle with Frieza, the mystery of the androids, and the terror of Majin Buu.
I lied when I said you could go. At least partially lied, for I will let you go to another dimension.
The Next Dimension, a Dragon Ball Z podcast. Join the fight at dbznextdimension.libsyn.com.
See ya.
Ready to form Voltron!
I am Batman!
This is a job for Superman!
Power Rangers!
Right away, Michael.
Autobots, transform!
By the power of Grayskull!
For the honor of Grayskull!
Hello. I'm the Doctor.
Charlie's Geekcast. Coming January 1st, 2013 to www.charliesgeekcast.com.
And welcome back, and let's get right back into it with protagonist and antagonist acting. And, yeah, we're going to start off again. Let's do our thing. Let's run down the cast list. We have Scott Wagner, who's probably best known from his work on Full House as... See, I always watch Family Matters, and so for me, at like time in the 90s, I was watching it on TBS, and so I only watched Full House to get to Family Matters, so I'm blanking on the name, but he was the boyfriend to the oldest daughter on Full House. That was a long way to get there, and I couldn't remember the name. But, you know, he played Aladdin with Brad Kane providing the singing voice. Again, another funny story that's on the extras. They talk about... You know, Scott Wagner said, yeah, sure, I can sing. And then they gave him sheet music to sing, and he couldn't sing. And they were laughing at it. But they still hired him anyways. But they had Lyndon Larkin provides the lovely voice for Jasmine, with Lea Seydoun providing the singing voice. The legendary Robin Williams as the genie. Jonathan Freeman as Jafar. Gilbert Gottfried as Iago. Frank Wechsler. Do I need to say more about his name? You know, Megatron, Cobra Commander, every animal that's ever been in an animated movie or television series plays Abu, Raja, and the Cave of Wonders. Mind you, one of the funniest things is, of his animal work, the probably best well-known stuff that he does is from Aladdin, which is, I kind of actually find funny. Doug Seal as the Sultan, and the legendary Jim Cummings as the head guard, who is actually has a name, and I don't want to mispronounce it, but it's actually named after a member of the art team who himself is Iranian. He actually would go to Iran and do research on like architecture and that stuff, and bring it back for the art department. But Jim Cummings is the head guard and shopkeeper. Yeah. There are a lot of funny things, mind you, like that. For instance, when Aladdin sort of, in the beginning of the film, after he gives the bracelet to the kid, and he comes to see the new suitor that's walking down, the two guys on either side of him are supposed to be caricatures of Ron Clements and John Lester, who are, you know, again, producers who worked on Aladdin, Little Mermaid, you know, Hercules. But, you know, back to protagonists and antagonists acting, again, starting with the protagonist. You know, Scott Wagner did a wonderful job as Aladdin. And I say that because at no point did I not feel like he wasn't the main character. And that's very important because you have Jasmine. You know, and again, Jasmine, he has to match Jasmine stride for stride because she's a main character and it's about her as well. And it's about them falling in love. But he's got to compete with her. He's got to compete to an extent with Joff Freeman as Jafar, who is this, you know, subdued most of the film, wonderful villain. But more importantly, he has to sort of compete with Robin Williams and the genie. Because the genie is a huge character in this movie. A lot of stuff that happens is because of the genie. And it could have been so easy for the genie to overpower Aladdin, and yet the genie never does. And it's funny, as they go forward with the films, Aladdin becomes so much bigger than the genie. The genie almost becomes insignificant to an extent, which is really amazing. And I think a lot of it had to do with Scott Wagner's performance of Aladdin. He did a wonderful job. And of course, Brad Kane, who provided the speaking voice for Aladdin in the early sort of scripts to show what was going on, did a wonderful job as well. His singing voice was just beautiful to listen to in the movie. And like I mentioned earlier, Lyndon Larkin as Jasmine, just a gorgeous voice. It's sweet and sultry. It's like something, it's like that perfect combination of something being sweet and salty. Here it's sweet and yet I was about to do a South Park reference, ladies and gentlemen, but I'll let you guess what that reference was, but sweet yet sultry. You know, there was a beauty about her, a sweetness within her voice And yet there was also a sort of sultry, a sort of a sexiness, one might say, that she could have. You know, there was just this range that Jasmine had throughout the film of both being very sweet and kindly and everything, and yet being very commanding and even at times, like I said, sultry. It's just this wonderful range that Linda Larkin, gave Jasmine that was just wonderful. It was just beautiful to hear her voice. There's a reason those three princesses, Ariel, Belle, and Jasmine, are so beloved. And again, it's voice work. And Linda Larkin, again, brought from Broadway, where she started out, did a wonderful job as Jasmine. I want to say Robin for last year. So you had Frank Winkler. Again, like I said, in the essay more. He did animal sounds in this movie, yet he was wonderful. I mean, there's not much more, but you know, at the same point in time, Cave of Wonders gave this very almost Cobra Commander if puberty. You know what it was? Frank Wicker sort of gave the Dr. Claw voice to the Cave of Wonders. Because think about it. It's like, lo, this, that who may only enter here is the diamond in the rough. You could easily segue that into, do you have diamond rough? Next time, Gadget! Next time! I'm hurting my voice there a little because it is a rough voice to do. But you know what? For the little stuff he did up for Abu and Raja, you know, again, it was just wonderful. He gave character to Raja, to Abu, to where they were more than just, oh, hey, it's a cute mascot character that the character has. They play essential parts, and they really gave those characters life. Again, really helping the film. And then you have Douglas Salil as the Sultan. Again, you know, very sort of, to an extent, you know, the Sultan, somewhat of a minor, major character in the movie, does a wonderful job with his bit. Sort of plays sort of great, sort of, I'm king, but more importantly, I'm a father and I'm looking after my daughter's well-being. But like I said, I think the big one to get to here is Robin Williams as a genie. Nailed it! And like I said, it's what makes Scott Wagner's performance as Aladdin that much more amazing. You know, again, he had to basically compete, with being more sort of more of a, or at least compete presence wise. And I think that's what I'm trying to get at is, you know, a voice actor, especially when you have voice actors giving great performances, it's about who can put their character more of a presence. And when you're in a movie like this and you have to, and you're playing the main character, and this is a reason why probably a lot of people see a lot of the princes as boring, is that sometimes they don't command the type of presence that as a lead and main character they are, they should have. We do see this a bit with Eric in Little Mermaid. We see this a lot with a lot of the princes in the early Disney films, especially Cinderella and, you know, Snow White. Again, those are early films and they didn't have that much of a role. It's one of the reasons why, of all those films, I think Sleeping Beauty is the best, because the prince does sort of command that presence. But again, it's like, cast to compete presence-wise with the genie, who is this big character that Robin Williams nails. Robin Williams is hilarious. He was the perfect person to voice this character. This is perfect casting, though it probably helped that, like I said, when they were first planning this movie, the part of the whole conception and selling of this movie being made was, hey, it's about this boy who finds this lamp and has this genie that is very much like a shape-shifting genie that is very comedic, like Robin Williams. That was really the selling point. So Robin Williams, first in mind, did it. Perfect casting. And when you listen to the commentary, they talk about all the different sort of material that Robin gave them. You know, Robin, he doesn't do the singing voice. Bruce Adler does that. But, you know, if you listen to the commentary, they say that Robin was... And again, I haven't confirmed that. Technically, they've given that Bruce Adler does both the speaking and singing voice for the merchant that you see at the beginning. Definitely did the singing voice, but it was Robin Williams who sort of did was the merchant voice at the beginning there. Speaking voice, mind you. And the story is that what they did, because again, he's trying to hawk items to you in the movie. What they did was they went down to a thrift store. They brought a box of just stuff at the thrift store. They put it in Robin Williams and just let Robin Williams riff on it. And what you saw was a small bit of what he did. You saw the hookah and sort of the Dead Sea Tupperware. Listen, still good. But like, he's pulling things and they're like, it's just hilarious. Like at what point he pulls out a bra. He goes, look, it's a double yarmulke. Look, it's a double sing sock. Fling. If you haven't told, I'm a huge Robin Williams fan. Surprise, surprise. But, you know, and stuff like that, and just all the different material that threw so many scenes. And the final scenes, there was a lot of material that they couldn't use, because they only use a little bit for time. There's a take where, you know, the genie is, like, doing sports commentary on the fight between Aladdin and Jafar. And there's so many riffs that he's, you know, when they're in a courtyard right before A Whole New World, and Genie's sort of giving Aladdin that prep talk, and that whole, you need to be a straight shooter, got it? You know, you see him turn to Jack Nicholson, and in another take, he does John Wayne. It's just so much material, and I think the reason I'm going over this is a plea to Disney. When you release Aladdin on Blu-ray in a couple years, and you know you are, please, please, pretty please, release, I don't care if it's a sort of, I know you have the camera footage of it, I don't care if it's just audio, please release all of this so I can laugh at it. There's a very small list I have of audio that I want to listen to, as far as from voice acting and from voice recordings of animated features. And there's two at the top of my list. Again, all the outtakes that Robin Williams did for this movie is one of them. The other is the supposed Beast Wars Christmas special that's locked away in the vaults of Mainframe. That's a whole other story. But I don't know what needs more to be said about Robin Williams before he nailed it. He just nailed it. The genie is such a you know. Like I said, even though I said that Aladdin became more of a presence through the film, it sort of has sort of overgrown or sort of overshadowed the genie. The genie is still a large presence among himself in TV series and stuff like that. And it's just, again, that wonderful spark that Robin Williams gave him. Just a you know what, and really, he helped the genie be what, you know, the genie was this sort of, there were scenes where, again, the main point of the genie was sort of give that comedy feel, you know, to sort of balance out a lot of the romance, so it wouldn't be too sappy, which, again, great balance by the, you know, filmmakers for that to happen, but again, the sort of emotional scene of the genie as well, to bring it down. Robin Williams did a great job there. You know, Eric Goldberg talks about how he sees this as a buddy cop film to an extent, just without the whole cop part. And, you know, he also talked about, you know, how is his honor sort of make the... In his mind, he sort of made the genie a bit Jewish. And again, of course, you have Aladdin, who's Arab, and sort of buddy cop, sort of between Arab and the sort of Jewish person, and sort of... He was sort of proud of him on a standpoint. And you see bits of that in the acting. Again, this sort of family, sort of buddy feel between the genie and Aladdin. That was the hard part. The easy part is all the comedy bits that throughout the film. That's the easy part. But Robin Williams, what he did best for the Genie was being able to do those high things and then yet immediately being able to bring it down to those more serious, the sort of sentimental moments between Genie and Aladdin as them being friends. And I just love this performance. As much as I just went cuckoo over it. Now let's get to antagonists. Again, I'll leave my favorite for last. In that case, being Iago, because I'm about to talk about Gilbert Gottfried. Oh, you know I'm about to talk about Gilbert Gottfried. But let's start off with Jonathan Freeman. I feel bad for like Scott Wagner and Linda Larkin and Jonathan Freeman here because they all did wonderful stuff in this film. Just great. But again, being comedy and me being a huge comedy fan, you have Robin Williams and Gilbert Gottfried. It's hard for me not to gush about them. But with Jonathan Freeman, just, oh my god, he is Jafar. The laughter he gave him, just that sort of, you know, subdued evil. It's like, at any point you feel like, oh, he could just explode and just be vile and evil reincarnated. And just that wonderful sort of deep voice that he gave Jafar. I must get elegance also in there, just wonderful, like, obviously, he was not worthy. Which I could easily segue to Gilbert going, oh, there's a big surprise! That's a big surprise. I think I'm gonna have a heart attack and die from that surprise! I can't help it, folks. I really can't help it. But again, just the elegance and yet the richness that he of evil, if I can put it in a term, that Jonathan Freeman gave Jafar was just wonderful. First class villain. He felt like a threat throughout the film. Just wonderful job of acting as Jafar for Jonathan Freeman. Really nailed the character. And like I said, Gilbert Gottfried as the parrot. What more do I need to say? I've been talking about him all this time. I don't need to talk about him anymore. But just again, like the Genie, was sort of the comedy, sort of along with Abu being the comedy relief for Aladdin, here you have Iago being the comedy relief for Jafar. Because, again, that sort of richness of sort of the villainy that Jafar gave, or that Jonathan Freeman gave Jafar, mind you, again, he needed that sort of comedy to bring it down a bit at times. And again, Gilbert Gottfried brought that. And again, it doesn't help, or I should say hurt. I need to calm down now. I'm like, oh my god, Gilbert Gottfried and Robin Williams. I get to gush about Gilbert Gottfried and Robin Williams. Mind you, I have to let you folks know something behind the scenes not good to the review. Because I was watching this movie, it put me on a Gilbert Gottfried kick, which of course means I watched his performance of the Aristocrat joke at the Hugh Hefner roast. If you don't know what the Aristocrat joke is, you do not know what you're missing. If you do, you just screamed at your computer screen or iPod or whatever, you filthy mother. But I digress. But again, provides that, you know, it didn't hurt that, you know, again, Ron Clements, Alan Musker, and their whole thing was, when in doubt, hurt the bird. You know, they had that for all, you know, when in doubt, Little Ariel, or should say, in Little Mermaid, it was, when in doubt, hurt the crab. And Beauty and the Beast is, when in doubt, hurt the clock. And in this case, it was, when in doubt, hurt the bird. And one of the funniest scenes is definitely that, you know, the Sultan riding on the carpet, and, you know, going, watch out, watch out. And again, whoo, and pop. Again, that's more comedy, but he's going, and a little fly and something going, come on, come on, come on. But Gilbert, now I gotta figure out, like, oh my, I gotta save something for comedy, which we're talking about in a little bit, if I ever get there. But I'm just going round and round in circles, folks. But Gilbert, again, he did that great job of providing that comedy relief. He was classic Gilbert Gottfried. amazingly PG. I think that's the most amazing part, was they captured the essence of Gilbert Gottfried and yet kept it PG. That's what astonishes me. I mean, really, if you've heard a Gilbert Gottfried routine, especially the Aristocrat one, tell me that's not astonishing. Because Gilbert Gottfried has the ability to be like George Carlin, just absolutely filthy and yet funny. But just did a great job of sort of that sidekick villain. I mean, and yet provided something to the film. Again, he's the one who comes up with the whole idea of Jafar to marry the princess and then throw him off a cliff. But did a great job in that role. With that, let's move on to story, our last big section to talk about here. And let's talk about the sort of overall plot and theme of the movie. Yeah, there were a couple of themes, and the it is a comedy buddy sort of movie here. It is the basic plot is really easy to follow. Aladdin wants to, get out from being a street rat. Well, that's more going to themes, which I'll get into in a second. But again, it is, Aladdin is captured by the Beauty of Jasmine. He wants to date / marry her and court her, but he has to be a prince. Genie helps him accomplish that. Jafar is trying to take over the kingdom. The simple answer to the plot is that it is that basic thing of he wants to get the girl. He does a thing. It is sort of the liar reveal plot that takes place here. Jafar wants to take over the kingdom and this and that. But one of the overall themes that I really love in this movie is the idea of freedom and being trapped, and both by sort of yourself, by society, and the stations that sometimes society puts you in, which really adds a depth to the plot and its deepness as well. This is not just, I want to get the girl, let's do funny things to get her. There is a deepness to these characters, again, that the actors did a great job of portraying, of, they feel trapped. Again, Aladdin feels trapped on the streets of Agrabah, even though he does all these wonderful things and he seems free, again, he's looked upon as a street rat, as really nothing. And he feels trapped by his station. On the other side is the complete opposite with Jasmine, who, she's the princess. She has everything she could ever want, but she feels trapped. She feels like, they have that whole scene where the pigeons are in the coop and she frees them. Because she feels like one of those pigeons trapped in the coop. Trapped by her station as royalty. Forced to marry a suitor who she may or may not love. And just that want to be free. You see that with Jafar. Jafar is number two, in the number two person in the kingdom behind the royal family. And he wants to be number one. He wants it for more evil purposes, and he sort of shows the sort of the consequences of trying to force your way to be free. But again, also with the genie. The genie is forced into a life of servitude. That willingness to be free. And ultimately, the whole thing is, regardless of what your station is or what you want to do in life, if it's not, the ultimate theme and sort of ultimate lesson learned in this movie is, if you're not yourself, are you really free? Because what happens is, with Jasmine and with Aladdin, they try to be something they are not to be free. With Jasmine, she tries to escape and tries to be a commoner, which she knows nothing about. And it leads to what, at that point in the movie, to her, she starts to fall in love with Aladdin, and she ends up losing him because she was trying to be something she wasn't. Or at least that's what she thinks. Aladdin tries to obtain love of Jasmine by trying to be something he isn't, a prince. Something that he realizes he can't be. And so you have these great lessons being learned and sort of the realization for all of these characters. Well, with the exception of Jafar and Iago, but that's a whole different story. And again, the genie says it right off. To be yourself. It is more important to be yourself. Because if you're yourself, then you are free. Yeah, society may make you feel like you're trapped. But the truth of the matter is, you aren't. As long as you are who you want to be and who you enjoy being, you're free. And that's a great lesson for kids to learn. In fact, I think that's a large problem in today's society, is that so many kids, they want to be something they're not. They want to be the cool kids and everything. And I guess I watched these films way too much when I was younger, along with the TV series, because I got the lesson. I was always one of those kids who just enjoyed being myself. And anybody who's been around me or talked with me knows I enjoy being myself. But it's just sort of a great plot to, overall plot and overall theme that goes throughout the movie. Then you have the character development throughout the movie that's just wonderful, mind you. Again, sort of the growth of Aladdin that you get to watch, and as he learns his lesson, it's just wonderful to watch. Again, just learning from the genie who's had years of experience. The growth of Jasmine was wonderful to watch as well. Again, she sort of got the lesson a little bit more early on. And again, one of the things was, again, that great range of Jasmine that Linda Larkin and the animators gave to her. Again, just as very kind, could be sexy, could be, being willing to do what's needed, that strong sense of a female character. One of my favorite scenes in the movie, and I'm sure people are going to laugh at this, but is the whole scene at the end where she has to kiss Jafar. That whole point where she sees Aladdin, she starts adding sultry and sexy, and she's trying to seduce Jafar. Not to that point, mind you, but we saw up to the point that she was willing to seduce him for the man she loved, because she was seducing him so Aladdin could get to the lamp. She was willing to kiss a vile, evil man that she absolutely disgusted to try to help Aladdin get the lamp. Everybody has the same reaction to when she kisses Jafar. Everybody goes like, I think I just threw up in my mouth. But that's the length she's willing to help her man. God bless that woman. But again, it's just the great depth and sort of, I don't know if the Jasmine at the beginning of the film would have done that or been that at the towards the end of the film if it had not been for her growth throughout the movie with Aladdin and understanding how important it was to be yourself. Again, just a great strength to her character. And then even with the genie. The genie had some great growth. Again, realizing his dreams and everything, just being comfortable with the whole point of wanting to be free, and yet being comfortable with, I'm a genie, whether I'm free or not, I'm going to be a genie. You see that growth throughout the film, and yet he does get his freedom at the end, which is, it's great to see that character grow. It's a little bit of growth, it's very minute, but it is there, and it is very fun to watch. With that, though, let's talk about one more aspect of the story, and that's comedy. Because, again, this is a comedy movie. And what more do I need to say? I've already been talking it throughout this entire review. The comedy is just absolutely outstanding. It really is. From Iago the Parrot. Even Jafar has some one of my favorites is the end of Friend Like Me. The whole Friend Like Me is just funny to watch for all the things he turns into. At least to one of the funny sort of behind-the-scenes stories. The whole applause scene gets a huge laugh. I love it. And the whole story behind that is they couldn't figure out what to do at the end. So Eric Goldberg said, just put an applause sign on it. And it gets one of the biggest laughs of the film. People actually applaud. It's hilarious. Like I said, Iago the Parrot. I talked about the whole Sultan thing. But one of my favorite things is, you know, they're coming out and Jasmine is approaching Jafar to talk to him about Aladdin after he's captured about a minute before. And so Jafar has to close his secret opening quick and he traps Iago and is like, Jafar, I'm stuck. And they're talking like, well, I had to arrest him for his crime. And what was his crime? Well, kidnapping the princess, of course. And then you have Iago going, Jafar, Jafar, I'm stuck, Jafar, like, and then Jafar hits him with his foot and goes, ah, that hurt. And I'm sorry for blasting years, by the way. But it's just hilarious to me. But you have that. The list of puns that Jafar says. And it's actually not something until I listened to the commentary. And it made me realize how hilarious the string of puns he does. How he gets very punny, very much like a sort of Bond villain. You know, ha ha, princess, your time is up. Gets wrestled away. Boo tries to get the lamp. Don't toy with me, boy! Turns Abu into a toy monkey. Things are unraveling fast! Unravels the carpet. Get the point! Ring of Swords. I'm just getting more. That string of lights is hilarious. I laugh at it now. Again, the genie throughout the movie. Again, at that third film when they're fighting the snake, the whole being a cheerleader. River Rat, get that snake! Get that snake! You stay out of this! Jafar, he's our man. If he can't do it, great! The comedy is just top-notch. I love the comedy throughout the film. And the comedy does a great thing for this film. If you take away the comedy and play it very straightforward, it is a very straightforward romantic film, and it can be dark, and it can be sort of very sappy and serious in places. The comedy lightens it up. The comedy gives the film balance. The comedy helps give the film the great pace that it has. Without it, this film would not work, in all honesty. It's sort of the Harlem Jazz, sort of Las Vegas artistic themality to the film, and sort of the comedy to help give it its pacing and everything that really makes this film work. At the end of the day, like I said, Aladdin is probably my third favorite film of all time, behind Beauty and the Beast and Sleeping Beauty. It is a wonderful film. It's everything you want of a Disney film. And again, it has this great legacy. Being part of that generation of films, Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Lion King, Mulan, Pocahontas, The Hunchback of Notre Dame, Hercules, that were just, it showed you why, when done at its best, hand-drawn animation can be and is better than live action, at least in my mind. It's part of that legacy. You know, and again, I didn't even touch on, like, the controversies of the film. Mind you, the controversies are stupid. There was a controversy from the sort of Arab American group, I'm blanking on the name, about one of the opening lyrics. Because there was one about, you know, how they'll cut off your hand, which they had a problem with that, but I guess they didn't have a problem with the whole, the shopkeeper wanted to cut off Jasmine's hands for stealing. They also had a problem where they felt they were too light-skinned. It's like, really? That's light-skinned? That's mocha to me. I guess I didn't see the problem there. I guess I'm just a invert. I don't even want to say it. I guess I'm just stupid. I'm stupid, but I'm not stupid for that reason. The controversy supposedly with this film and the urban myths are just hilarious to laugh at. Because they're stupid. You know, that, there was a whole controversy with, you know, Genie saying the line after he rescues Aladdin from drowning, saying, I really like you, kid. Not that I want to pick out curtains or anything. Really? people had like, oh, are you making the genie gay? It's like, really? You hear that line and you don't laugh and think, oh my god, they may have made the genie gay. Really? What is wrong? How sad is your poor, pathetic life? That's your problem with the movie. Or the whole urban myth of what Scott Wagner says, you know, on the balcony where people saying, oh, he says, good teenagers take off their clothes. I listened to that very closely. Like, okay. I understand he's whispering and everything, and Jasmine has that weird look, but who in their right mind hears that? Because it doesn't sound anywhere close. It really doesn't. You know, he's trying to... Why would he say that? He's trying to back the tiger off from eating his face off. Mind you, he has his turban off and Jasmine sees and thinks he recognizes him. Really, people need to get a life. But I digress. It's... This film is perfection. Just like Beauty and the Beast. I think Beauty and the Beast... I really don't see the point of trying to say which is the better movie. Obviously, I think Beauty and the Beast is better. It's higher on my list. It's number one. As far as animated movies are concerned. I couldn't sit here and really tell you right now off the top of my head why I think Beauty and the Beast is better than Aladdin. If anything, I think the closest word is it's just, I just like the more traditional aspect of Beauty and the Beast. Just the more traditional, straightforward love story. This is more comedy. And for whatever reason, I guess I put that over each other. But this is perfection as well. I love this movie. I watch them both. I love both of them. This is a wonderful movie. It's Disney at its best. What more do I need to say? Hell, why are you even continuing to listen to this podcast? By the time I got done with music, you should have already popped in your DVD and listened to the movie already. This is a wonderful movie. It should be in anybody's movie library. Anybody who loves movies. If you do not have this movie in library, your library is not complete. It's wonderful. It's a 5 out of 5. It's a 10 out of 10. It's a 100 out of 100. Whatever rating system you want to have. 5 out of 5 for me. If you don't have it, get it. Or, if more importantly, if you don't have it yet, wait for the Blu-ray in about 2 to 3 years. And get it. If you can't. Especially, if you, like I said, I highly suggest, though, for now, going out and trying to find the special edition DVD that I have. Just for the extras, because they're outstanding. But that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. A bit extra long, you know, for my return. Remember, if you have any comments or emails or anything that you want to leave me, there are several ways you can do it. You can leave an email at absolution132@yahoo.com. That's absolution132@yahoo.com. And I am planning maybe to get a new email address, by the way. We'll see in maybe a couple weeks. But you can also leave us a comment on our Facebook page that you can find by searching the Absolution Network on Facebook. Like us and leave us a comment there. And you can always leave us a comment on the post, which you can, of course, find at www.an.132productions.com. And, of course, while you're there, remember to check out all the other 132 Productions sites that are part of us, a part of our site, part of other sites that we have. Of course, there's Shaft Plus that's returning on April 1st, which you can find at www.shaftplus.com. Gene and Chris making their return. Of course, Chris's Random Redbox Reviews that you can find at www.randomredboxreviews.com. Of course, the Otaku Momentum right here on the Absolution Network. And, of course, my other podcast, which includes Tokyo SOS, which will have a new episode soon. You can find that at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And, of course, my Comic Book Crazy podcast, which will also soon have new episodes. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. course, while you're at any of the sites, remember to check out all our friends that you can find on the sidebar of the site. This, of course, includes Michael Bailey's Views from the Long Box, along with Batman, Bailey's Batman podcast, and From Crisis to Crisis that he does with his good friend Jeffrey Taylor. Brad Douglas' Spider-Man Crawlspace, Steven Schleicher's Major Spoilers podcast, and of course, Scott Gardner's Two True Freaks podcasting network, along with many others that you can find on their sidebar. Check them out. They do great stuff. And that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. I hope you enjoyed my return. And next week, well, you know, it's kind of funny. I think early in February, I talked about doing Lion King. Well, there has been kind of a change. Because I'm probably going to save Lion King for next year because I want to review a more newer movie. And that newer movie came out last year. That movie is a love fest that all us nerds had. Next week, we get retro video gaming. Or I should say, we get our retro video gaming on as we proceed to watch and review Wreck-It Ralph right here on the Prerogative. So, until next time, my Toonami generation, stay golden.
Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.